This is a Chronicle podcast, bringing you ideas in the service of medicine.
From the Chronicle podcast system, this is Vendor on Psoriasis with Dr. Ron Vendor. Based on the popular Vendor on Psoriasis column in the Chronicle of Skin and Allergy, Dr. Vendor provides brief synopses of recent significant clinical developments in psoriasis research and provides his observations and comments to accompany each report. In each episode, Dr. Vendor will answer questions and offer his expert observations and anecdotes on treating this chronic disease. If you have a question for him or want to be in touch at any time, just send an email to vendor@chronicle.org. That's V-N-D-E-R at chronicle.org. And, if you attach a voice clip, we might even use your question on an upcoming episode. Support for this podcast comes from Sun Pharma Canada. Sun Pharma is a world leader in specialty therapeutics and is now positioned to be an even larger contributor to the Canadian dermatology landscape. Learn more at www.sunpharma.com. And now, here's Jeremy Visser.
From the labs to trials to your office, here comes Dr. Vendor on psoriasis. Don't they use lab, but do try this. It's Dr. Vendor on psoriasis. Dr. Vendor on psoriasis.
Welcome back. I'm Jeremy Visser of the Chronicle of Skin and Allergy. You're listening to the Vendor on Psoriasis podcast with Dr. Ron Vendor. In our eighth episode, Dr. Vendor will be talking about psoriasis treatment efficacy in body regions, use of analgesics and lifestyle factors, and genetic risks of incident psoriasis. Welcome back, Dr. Vendor.
Thanks, Jeremy. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Vendor, our first study for today looks at differences in clinical responses to ustekinumab based on body region. They found that the lower extremities were the most difficult to treat. What are your thoughts on this study?
Thank you, Jeremy. You know, any skin disease whatsoever, including lichen planus, dermatitis, and psoriasis, which we're talking here today, the lower legs are the most difficult to treat of any body area. And we're not really sure why that is at all. It's certainly an area where you don't have trauma, unless you're like me in a klutz and you're always bumping into tables and such. And some people would think that scalp is difficult because people scratch it and it kevnarizes. And there's no true kevnarization on the lower legs. You could see hands and feet, which we know palmar plantar psoriasis is difficult to treat. But I'm not surprised with the outcome of the study. And I'm happy to see that it correlates with my clinical practice as well. And I believe almost everyone's clinical practice. This was a Korean study. They looked at patients that had significant psoriasis, not even for a short period of time, but they had a body surface area that was at about minimum of 10, but even up to 30% of their body. And they had psoriasis for at least 2 years and up to even 20 years. So this is not a mild group at all. And so there was a lot of psoriasis. They looked at the head and neck, the upper extremities, trunk, and lower extremities as well. And then they tried to correlate it. And that's easy to do because the PASI, you know, separates those four areas. But consistently, the lower extremities were that they said in the study the most difficult to treat. But I don't think it's the most difficult to treat. I think that they're the slowest to respond. You're not treating the lower legs with any more difficulty than you treat the arms. And this study used ustekinumab. And so, you know, you're not injecting ustekinumab in the particular areas as well. And so I wouldn't say it's more difficult to treat. I think it's more difficult for it to respond. So, I mean, palmoplantar is more difficult to treat because you're focusing just on the hands and feet. But this doesn't surprise me. I don't know if it's because of dependency with standing and such, but it fits with my clinical practice.
Our next study looks at the use of analgesics in patients with psoriasis with or without psoriatic arthritis. What stood out to you in this study, Dr. Vendor?
Thank you, Jeremy. The study that looks at, you know, pain relief with patients that have psoriasis, whether or not they have psoriatic arthritis, because you would think that if they had patients that had psoriatic arthritis are always going to be on some kind of analgesic or pain relief, usually, depending on what medication that they're on. But patients not only have joint pain, they also have skin pain as well. And this patient had 4,000 patients. It's a Danish cohort. And Denmark, every patient that's on a biologic or has psoriasis needs to be in a registry. So they keep track of everything. I think Sweden does the same thing. We attempt to, here in North America, to put patients in registries. However, it's easy in Denmark because they must be registered. But they also had a control. They had 3,500 reference individuals as well. And they were looked at actually opioid use over a year. And in the general population in Denmark, it's about 10%. However, in psoriasis patients that had psoriasis, if they did not have psoriatic arthritis, almost 14% of these patients were on some kind of analgesic and opioid for their skin pain. So not only can psoriasis be itchy, difficult to look at, and also have psychosocial disturbance, there also is skin pain as well. But if they had psoriatic arthritis, that was almost up to 23% of the patients with opioid. So they didn't need to only have joint symptoms, but these patients, because of pain in their skin, were on this type of pain relief. However, if they had psoriatic arthritis, they're more likely to be on a painkiller, as one would expect. So the study that this Danish cohort looked at showed and proved that analgesics are still used in patients that have psoriasis, and one must be careful with, certainly with opioid addiction.
Our final study compares lifestyle factors and genetic risks of incident psoriasis. What did you think about this study, Dr. Bender?
Well, thank you, Jeremy, for bringing this study to my attention. Looking at lifestyle factors and genetic risks on just incident psoriasis. And what is difficult, this one's based on a UK biobank and didn't have just 1,000, 2,000 patients, but 500,000 participants, And they were looking at genetic risk, and they categorized them into three different categories: low, intermediate, and high categories. And they looked at lifestyles such as smoking and BMI, physical activity, and certain diets as well. And so it's a complicating type of study. And they looked at these as genetic risk groups. And they looked at each group genetically to see whether incident psoriasis was associated with the lifestyle level. Now, we know that patients that have psoriasis tend to drink more, or are usually heavier, and have less physical activity. What we don't really know is if these patients that are heavier have smoking history, have sedentary type of lifestyle, are more at risk for psoriasis. I guess if there's no genetic risk, then we really don't know if that makes someone more prone to getting psoriasis if there's no genetic risk group. So they looked at this low genetic risk and an ideal lifestyle group, and then a high genetic risk group and a poor lifestyle group. And what they found that is that if there was a poor lifestyle and a high genetic group, that the hazard ratio was about 4.6. Now, there was no interaction between the genetic risk and lifestyle. So what they found is that the population that had a poor lifestyle and a high genetic risk were more likely to have psoriasis compared to those that had a good lifestyle and a low genetic risk. So the answer is still not clear as to whether the genetic risk, and what they didn't look at is the genetic risk and a good lifestyle, like what the reason was. So it's hard to determine, really get from this. I would expect that if you need a high genetic risk and a poor lifestyle, I think that if you just have a genetic risk and a good lifestyle, it may not be protective against it. So this study still needs a lot of questions to be answered, despite the 500,000 participants.
Our first listener question for today comes from Ontario. In reference to the findings of the first study, specifically the correlation between body region and ustekinumab treatment effectiveness, How do you foresee dermatologists adapting existing psoriasis treatments, if at all?
So thank you very much for the question, our listener from Ontario. And I think what we need to do is to adapt to our treatments is not change the way we do our treatments based on this study, but to use the study as a reference point to warn the patient or discuss with the patient that, you know, we're going to see clearing happening. However, we also may not see the improvement in the legs as fast as you would expect. So, you know, you could say to the patient, things will get better. Don't be surprised if the legs don't get better as fast as the arms. And with that, maybe encourage adjunctive topical therapy to the legs that may need to be continued for longer than one would want. When patients go on biologic, they don't want to be on topical therapy, but they may need to add, for example, topical therapy or even ultraviolet light therapy specifically to the legs. But that's what I would use that first study as a practical clinical approach to helping the patient.
Our next listener question comes from our nation's capital. In your experience, how common is joint pain in psoriasis patients?
So thank you for that question. I think that how common joint pain is in psoriasis patients, and that's where the distinction of simple joint pain that is psoriatic arthritis or joint pain that is not psoriatic arthritis. So we know that patients that have psoriasis have about a 30% chance, or there's about 30% of our patients that have psoriasis have concomitant psoriatic arthritis. However, there are many, many more that do not have psoriatic arthritis, but have simple joint pain, which can be from osteoarthritis, could be even from rheumatoid arthritis as well, even though they have skin psoriasis. So there are many reasons for them to have joint pain. They could have joint pain from just having a sedentary lifestyle, from being overweight as well. And so the quick answer would be, you know, how common is joint pain in psoriasis patient? The answer that, you know, you would have on an exam is 30% of patients with psoriasis or psoriatic arthritis. That's not the question. It's joint pain. And so many, many more patients, I'd say at least half of the patients will complain of some kind of joint pain that have psoriasis. Doesn't mean they have psoriatic arthritis. And collaboration with a rheumatologist may help distinguish that. And early treatment to prevent joint destruction would be suggested.
Lastly, we have a question from the Greater Toronto Area. How important are lifestyle factors in the development of psoriasis?
So thank you for that question. Well, as was discussed in that last study, the lifestyle factors that in the development of psoriasis have potentially some involvement depending on the genetic risk. So let's just forget about the genetic risk of psoriasis. And now you're in a chicken and egg type of question. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? And I do have an answer for that. I believe it's the egg, but I don't think that necessarily lifestyle factors will give a higher risk of psoriasis unless there's a big genetic predisposition. In other words, I would not say that obesity, metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, smoking makes you at higher risk for psoriasis unless you have some kind of genetic predisposition to it. Because otherwise, we wouldn't have a 1% to 3% incidence of psoriasis worldwide. We know that obesity is much greater than 1% to 3%. Diabetes is greater than 1% to 3% and so forth. So I think that you need to have some kind of genetic predisposition. It certainly doesn't help in those that have that genetic predisposition. But in saying that these lifestyle factors will give you a higher risk is very unlikely. There's probably lifestyle factors just give a higher risk of death than it certainly does psoriasis.
Thank you, Dr. Vender. Listeners, if you have comments or questions for Dr. Vender, send them over. Send an email to health@chronicle.org. Add a voice clip attachment to your questions and you might appear in a future episode of this podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with your friends. You can subscribe at Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. This podcast is produced in cooperation with Sun Pharma Canada. I'm Jeremy Visser of Chronicle Companies. Your host has been Dr. Ron Vender, founder and director of Venderum Innovations in Psoriasis, a center of excellence for psoriasis offering a comprehensive management solution for individuals with psoriasis. We'll talk again next week.
Don't use that to try this, says Vendor on Psoriasis. Dr. Vendor on Psoriasis.